Hello and welcome to Criterion.
Close up.
I'm always curious, Aaron, what you're gonna do for close up. Like, are you gonna, like, you know, is it gonna be some kind of an accent? Or are you gonna be doing some kind of character? And sometimes I have no idea, and I just keep going. I just keep rolling.
I have no idea sometimes until it happens.
Right.
And we were talking about Johnny Dangerously, and I was doing the Roman Moroni accent beforehand, which I don't. It's not technically cussing. So Fargan, he says Fargan instead of you know what.
Right.
But anyway, so that was like a really bad attempt of channeling that accent in a close up.
Nice.
We'll see how it worked.
Right. Oh, nice work. It's always entertaining. Hope folks enjoy it. But this is Criterion Close Up. I'm Mark Herney here with Aaron West. Good to talk to you again, Aaron, after a little time off, short time off.
Little break, so, but we've had stuff going on, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, we've been talking on other channels, but so we will be talking today about the Howard Hawks film Only Angels Have Wings from 1939, and we have a few other little tidbits to share and some short takes, so that's our plan. Looking forward to it.
I could have made a flying noise for the intro.
Yeah, right. Nice.
I think that sounded like a meow. Okay.
Well, you do have cats, so.
That's true.
So we had a giveaway, and we had some really nice entries, and it's probably time to give out the award, huh, Aaron?
Yeah, I think we sat on this too long. I think people are going to get angry. Well, not too much, but. We assembled a few tweets, and the best way to look at these, you know, you don't want to just listen to us reading tweets. Well, maybe you do. I don't know. But if you go to CriterionCloseUp.com, and assuming it's the latest episode you're looking at, you can see in the show notes, you'll see the tweets embedded. So if you want to watch them along with us as we discuss them here. But we're going to give this Hertzfeld set away to the funniest tweet. Is that what we decided?
Yes. Yep. Funniest tweet.
Okay. So you want to go first or shall I?
So am I going to go look at these and are we going to read them or just vote on them?
I guess we could read them. They're not too many.
Yeah, they're probably short enough. So we've got Ron at Punk Ron said, "It hurts me that I haven't seen any of Don Hertzfeld's films." So and that was the thing we should mention. The contest was you had to tweet at us with "Hurts Me," and of course "Hurts"
right.
Spelled with the way that Don Hertzfeld spells his name.
Yep.
So,
and
that's the first one.
No mistakes there. I guess Hertz is the easy part of his name. It's the felt that people have trouble with.
Yeah.
Assuming there's a next time, we'll mix it up. Our good friend Dave, who's been on the show, says, "It hurts me to say this, but I'm only just now listening to this episode."
Dave.
Yeah, you're slacker. And he posted that. I didn't really date these, these aren't in order, so I have no idea. I guess he posted it late, but of course I think we announced it like 3 weeks ago, so
right, yeah, been going for a
while. Off the hook, Dave.
So we had Nolan Tucker said, "Hurts me!" with an exclamation point. Great episode, guys, enjoyed this new format. Of course, you know, with positive feedback like that, maybe we should give it to Nolan, but anyway, we'll keep going.
Well, we did say funny.
Nolan
probably heard this before we made that rule, and hey,
true.
Thanks for the nice feedback.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Brad Guillory at Mr. Gill said, "Never hurts me." So, yeah.
We won't. We promise not to, Brad.
Yeah.
This one's good. I like from Nick Lyman. "It hurts me to see people scalp hard-to-find films online. I'd love a chance to experience such a beautiful day and more." So, very nice.
He has an image there, too. I'm sorry. That was somebody else. Yeah, I'm with him. The thing is, Don Hertzfeld is still selling these at Bitter Films, so the whole scalping thing might be fiction. He might just be selling it forever.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
All right, Corey Householder said, "Will you please hurts me?" Which may look ordinary, but he had an image of a guy with a spoon and a banana. Again, this is why you really should look at the visuals, because that
right.
doesn't do it justice. But, you know, it's a cute image.
Yeah, it's a tough part with the audio format. But yeah, and it looks like a Hertzfeld image, so
it might be. I don't know which one it's from. But, and if he drew it himself, then wow.
Yeah, yeah, I was wondering.
Nice Fred, stick figure.
Fred Osuna said, it hurts me to say, Criterion close-up, but your nearly obsolete podcasting format is an unfortunate byproduct of social media platform overload.
Yeah. That's, yeah, he was getting a little meta on us.
Nice.
Yes, and it is, I don't know if the new one is nearly obsolete or the old one, or, yeah. Or are we on social media too much?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what Fred was going for there, but
It's funny. I just don't get it.
Right.
I think he meant it in a funny, chummy, like
of course.
Yeah, cutesy, deprecating way, but
right. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, my turn. I'm sorry. Rod Penaflor said, "Please don't hurt me by not giving me that giveaway."
And hashtag Don Hertzfeld.
Parentheses, yeah. So, and then the last one.
Yeah, Joshua Wilson, our friend there, Criterion CU. It hurts me to think that you might not watch my son's hilarious cartoon with an embedded YouTube video. Very nice.
Yeah, did you watch it?
I'm going to watch it right now. I don't think I caught it before.
All right, well, I'm going to talk for 30 seconds as you watch this video. And,
perfect.
And listeners, go to the website and watch this little video. And
it's very Hertzfeld-y.
It is. Yeah, I'm actually impressed. When I saw the tweet, I assumed his son is like 4, and I was
right.
Waiting for actual stick figures. But it was pretty impressive. So he has my vote.
Nice. Yeah, that's... I'm with you, Aaron. I like the visuals. I like the visual of the spoon and the banana. Yeah, I think we got a winner.
Yeah. and again, go to Criterion Close Up if you want to see the YouTube, and we'll tweet it out too. It deserves it. So all right, congratulations, Joshua Wilson. I feel like we know all these people.
I know, but, right? We interact online. Speaking of the social media,
these are our only 9 listeners.
Ouch! Oh no.
No, a few more than that. All right. Well, all right. Congrats, Josh.
Yeah.
We'll get in touch with you, and we'll send you this out, and we'll do more of these. This was fun.
Yeah, that was a good time, for sure. So, moving on, we wanted to just share some of the work that we've been doing. I mentioned we've been off for a week, but we've still been podcasting, Aaron, and we've been talking, you and I, quite a bit, just with other people. So
we've been busy, yeah. And we took a little break from ours. Now, one of those was, we already mentioned, for Rivette, Jacques Rivette. So we, and to prep for that, we had to watch, a 13-hour movie.
Longest movie I've ever watched, for sure.
We had notice. We had about a month or so.
Mm-hmm. But still, it was still tough to kind of schedule it. I found myself binging towards the end. I wanted to watch some other Rivette films too. Like, you know, I did catch Duel and with Paris Belongs to Us. I did catch that. Mm-hmm. So, and I know you'd seen some others. You've
a
seen
a couple others,
Haunted Nord,
yeah.
But
I didn't binge those. I did binge At One, and that takes a lot of out of your prep time. So I think we took a week off, and then I think we actually had to take another week off because we were just immersed in Rivette for a while.
Yeah.
But that's in the can. I think we had a good discussion.
Yeah, good time.
Not, I'm not sure if this will be out before that or you know. We're actually going to talk about 3 casts, and I'm not sure which will be out first. So,
right,
you'll see.
We will see. Yeah, they're in the can. The one that is out currently is The Newsstand. So that's one we joined Ryan last week to talk about the film Struck because we hadn't really on Criterion Cast gotten together. He had talked about a little bit on Off the Shelf. We also talked about the Cat People. Newsletter Clue and Usme Sambene a few other little topics. Of course, spent most of our time on Filmstruck. So
we did talk a lot of Filmstruck. Yeah, actually, I listened to it today, and I think we did all right. And this was our first time as, you know, just you and I talking to Ryan about Criterion stuff, which was kind of neat, I thought.
Yeah, that was cool. Although he did call us the Criterion close-up boys, so instead of men. But that's okay, Ryan. We'll let it go.
Yeah, boys to men, I don't know. next show, maybe we'll grow up.
Yep.
Or maybe we had to prove our mettle.
Right.
And so now we're men. Criterion men.
And the last show was, this one's upcoming. Just like you said, we're going to be talking again this week. We'll be talking on Criterion Cast Chronicles. I believe it's episode 3, talking about the mm-hmm. April titles. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I think the order will probably be Rivette will probably be up first, and then our episode, and then Chronicles is my guess. And they're all on the Criterion Cast master feed, so go check it out. I'm talking about the Lincoln films on Wednesday night.
The Kennedy films?
Yeah, did I say Lincoln?
it's another important president, but yeah.
Sure, yeah, he's on currency at least. Kennedy isn't, but they're both assassinated. There's that.
He did show up. Lincoln did show up in the films, if I remember too. The statues. So you're covered.
That's true. Yeah. So yeah, I'll be talking about those. And what are you talking about?
I have Barcelona. So with the box set of sorts coming out, and of course Barcelona being the third in the Whit Stillman trilogy coming
out. Walt Whitman, yeah.
That's right. We're just going back.
He's a great filmmaker. I loved him in Breaking Bad. You haven't watched that, I'm sorry.
I've seen Breaking Bad. Good show.
And then good. And then on the heels of all this, we have one more show coming up. Our next show will be the Manchurian Candidate. And we're gonna have nothing.
We'll be all podcasted out. I'm sure we can get up for it. I'll do some calisthenics and funnel a beer or something. I'll be all set. Be ready to go.
Yeah, we can get up for it.
Moving on. So yeah, so lots of content to look forward to. So definitely, like you said, check out the Criterion Cast feed.
And probably a little bit of a break after that. Well, I'm going on vacation or going out of town, so Memorial Day weekend, I think we'll take a break.
Yep. Cool. So you had a nice little purchase, Aaron. Tell us about your recent electronics purchase.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't tell you this story because I wanted to tell it to you here, but we bought a new Region Free player. And this time we bought a true Region Free player. And actually, I'm going to look up the name of the company. I previously had a Region B player, and that worked out for me. The only thing is I have this Film Geek Man Cave, which I'm in right now. And I think you've seen some pictures, and you see this stack behind you. Criterion, some posters. Maybe one day I'll put some pictures online of it. It's still in process. But that Region B player didn't work with my upstairs TV. And in fact, and I don't know why, it just wouldn't agree with it. And that's the bigger TV. It's the nicer one. And actually, we can thank our good buddy Jacques Rivette, because I had to watch that downstairs. And actually, most of it, the player arrived towards the very end. And I just, spending 13 hours on a smaller TV just prompted me to make a purchase.
Nice.
So anyway, I'll keep it down there, but I this time I bought an actual Region Free, and I don't know, I hadn't seen many people go down this route before either, but what I did is there's a company on Amazon, and I have no affiliation, there's no affiliate link here, but what they do is they kind of specialize in these, and what they take existing players, in fact, the Region Free player was the same exact version, Sony version, as my regular player.
That's cool.
It is, yeah. It was only about $100 more expensive, because what they do is they go inside it and they modify it, and they make it to where you can press your buttons. You press one button for A, one button for B, one button for C. And it's so easy.
That's cool.
And so I'm loving it, actually. The name of the company is Two20 Electronics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have a website. Yeah, okay. I know of them, and Bombay Electronics is another one that's known. I can't remember which one I bought mine from, but one or the other. They're two of the well-known. They have their website. Of course, they sell on eBay and Amazon. And yeah, like you said, they do the modifications, and they're a little more expensive because you pay for the labor of what they do instead of your. You can go on YouTube and try to do it yourself, but I think it's worth spending the money for sure.
And one reason I went with Region B to begin with is I just didn't want to mess with going into firmware and messing up a player. Yeah. And I wasn't as familiar with 220 Electronics. And now in hindsight, it was actually a different company that shipped it to me, but I think it was the player was 220 Electronics.
Okay.
But yeah, I love it. Would recommend it. Go buy one.
Nice. Yeah, definitely worth having. So that's cool with the changing too, because I think my I haven't even gone into kind of how the setup is, but the way I have mine currently is my player is an Oppo, and it plays all region DVDs, and then with the Blu-ray player, I have it set to region B, and I only use it for region B, and then if I want to play region A, I just put it on the other, I've got a PlayStation 3. So I don't even mess around with the changing, but I know some players are harder to change. It's kind of a pain. So my old
some
one was.
Some are, yeah.
Yeah.
I found that the only time I can't change is when I'm in the middle of playing a disc.
Actually,
probably even that would work, because I don't think that I'm going to try it. I'm playing it. Only Angels Have Wings right now.
Nice.
Yeah, it does nothing. So I don't. I guess I'll let you guys know later if the next DVD gets a region error.
It works or not,
actually,
yeah.
I'm sorry. It was the name of the company I bought it from was Multisystem Electronics, but it was a 220 Electronics player. So maybe they're the same company. I have no idea.
Okay, cool. Maybe and you bought it on Amazon?
I did, yes.
Yeah, maybe it's an Amazon seller or something. Very cool.
Might be. Yeah, I recommend everybody. We talk about Criterion, but it's like a whole new world when you open yourself up to Region B.
A lot of good stuff out there. So, yeah, it does hurt your wallet a little bit because you want to buy those things, but it's worth it. We've both made the plunge, and we're definitely both happy we did.
It hurts your wallet because you get to buy those things.
Right. It's the way to think about it. Well, and, we wouldn't have the Rivette set, the Arrow set that we watched. We would have bought the Carlotta one. And, I really like this Rivette set we got. So, it opens
too,
up your world for sure.
And we did have one person on that episode that had the Carlotta set. I'm sure it's fine for him. But, I was reinforced that we made the right call in getting the Arrow set. So,
yeah, very nice. So, should we get into some short takes before we get into Only Angels Have Wings? We've been doing some watching, and Aaron, I know you've been doing a little more watching than I have as usual, but so be curious to see what you're going to throw out there. I'll turn it to you first. What's your first short take?
Well, I saw a ton because I got sick, and I got bad sick. Like, I took 2 days off work, and I still actually have the remnants. I don't know if it'll come through on the show. So I watched like just a boatload of movies.
Awesome.
So it was really tough to narrow it down because I watched some great stuff. But I'll actually start with one I saw before I got sick. I actually saw it in the theaters, and it was Everybody Wants Some, which is the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, Richard Linklater. Very possible Criterion someday. Maybe probable. I don't know. But it seems to be he seems to be another Wes Anderson, and Baumbach seems to be as well.
Yeah.
And have you seen it?
I haven't yet. No, I wanted to take my wife on a date night, just haven't been able to yet.
I don't know if, it depends on your wife. It's very frat boyish. If you've seen Dazed and Confused, that's high school. This is college.
Right.
But it's, they're all, the title, Everybody Wants Some. Everybody want they want what
some
some right. That's all that their motivation is, just the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And it's very lewd. If you're easily offended, I mean it's not like, trust me, it's not like the movies we talked about on the Gross Out episode.
Right.
But it's lewd. some infantile humor, toilet humor a little bit. It's good. I enjoyed it. It's entertaining for sure. It's it's tough to not compare it to Dazed and Confused, which I think is just tremendously better than not just this movie, but a lot of movies. I'm just a huge fan of that movie. You know, it's one of the most quotable movies as well. This one, I don't think will be.
Okay.
I think I ended up giving it a 7.5 or a 7, you know, out of 10, which is good.
Yeah, that's solid. You know, good. I mean, it means it's still a good Linklater film, just not one of his best.
But the thing with Dazed and Confused is it has gotten better with age. Mm. So this one, who knows? You know, it's 70s or kind of 70s, 80s, that transition. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to bring my wife. She's a child of the 80s and likes 80s movies. So it seemed like one taking place in the 80s that she would like. So we'll get there eventually. So my first one is I got to watch the documentary Amy. This is from last year, 2015. If I remember right, it won the Oscar for Best Documentary. And we checked it out on Prime. Thank you. I should remember because I do think, I mean, The Look of Silence is still a better doc. But anyway.
That's why I remember. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, it's the story of Amy Winehouse, if folks don't know, and it just says, in her own words, featuring unseen archival footage and unheard tracks. And this is another kind of date movie for my wife and I. She likes true stories, and I wanted to hear more about Amy. I didn't know much about her at all, frankly. She was kind of part of the music scene that had just kind of passed me by for whatever reason. And it's really good. It's really a self-documented destruction in this film. And there's some scenes that actually brought me back to Criterion films, Aaron, with like, you know, there's a scene where she's high or coming down on stage, reminded me of The Rose, you know, with Bette Midler.
Definitely.
You know, that kind of scene. And then, you know, she has a kind of Sid and Nancy relationship with, I can't remember his name, but her beau at the time, who had, you know, introduced her to drugs. So out of print from Criterion. So, you know, I just was kind of in a Criterion frame of mind watching those. And it really gives you some nice access to some behind the scenes, like the duet that she did with Tony Bennett. Pretty late, but one thing I really took away from this, I think, is, you know, from a theme, is it seemed like people, it was almost like, I guess I was asking, do people really know Amy? It just felt like people made a lot of assumptions, and, you know, the story was told with some by other people and this archival footage, but you know, she seems like kind of a distant person, almost unknowable. And so I just wonder, you kind of get that feeling throughout the movie that she had a lot of, and she did have some difficult times when she was growing up, but some kind of personal demons that she was dealing with. So yeah, it's a tough film, but a good film. And I'd like to see more by, I believe it's Asif Kapadia. I haven't seen anything else from Asif, so. Good film.
Me neither. Actually, and of course, we just lost Prince, so it makes, and it appears that, and we're still waiting for toxicology, who knows, but it certainly looks like he had his demons as well that we didn't know about.
Yeah, claim that he didn't, but it appears he might have, so we'll see. Yeah.
We'll find out, unfortunately. I did like Amy as well, but my one issue with it was that, you know, she was such a tabloid, and really the tabloids kind of brought her down. That was sort of her downfall. It's just she didn't want all that attention.
Sure.
And in the movie, they used a lot of tabloid footage. So it made for a better movie, but I kind of think that, you know, if she were around, you know, and could pick and choose what scenes to include, she probably would say, no, none of these.
Right.
These guys were Farg and ice holes.
Right. It's the word of the podcast, Fargan, for sure.
Yeah.
Nice. So what's your second?
Well, my second, I went to in the theaters again. It's nice to do this every now and then. Yeah. And I was sick and this was the evening before my 2 days off work. The same evening we taped the newsstand. I had no idea how sick I was. But I saw Blue Velvet, the 30th anniversary, nice. Which would be sweet if it came out on Criterion. I haven't, you know, there have been some murmurs, you know, I think more optimistic that are hopeful maybe that it'll come out. We know there's some Lynch coming out some point, but we don't know what or when. Maybe this, maybe not. There is a DVD or a Blu-ray out already, right?
There is, yeah, from the studio. It's still in print, I believe. So, but it's the 25th anniversary. So maybe is there a 5-year limit on that, or who knows? We'll see.
Find out.
Yeah,
I hadn't seen this in a while, but I love it, and I had probably seen it on either an old DVD or VHS, and the last time, and it was really something to watch it both in the theaters, just because it's such a beautiful movie. I mean, beautiful as in photographed.
Right, cinematography.
There's some darkness in the content for sure. Gas mask. but what was really cool about it was watching it with a sold out crowd. This is something you would not get if you watched it in 1986. Yeah, of course, 30 years, 86. Because probably people were probably just figuring it out. David Lynch was not as known, he didn't have the cult. He did have a cult following, but not like today.
Right.
We're watching the movie, and just these awkward, clunky Lynchian lines that Kyle MacLachlan would give or Laura Dern, the audience would just bust out laughing. and I love that, and I laugh right with them.
Yeah.
But then when Dennis Hopper would be on screen screaming and cursing and doing his gas mask, that's so over the top that it's almost comical, but silence.
It was silent, really. Nice. That's good. Pabst Blue Ribbon, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Heineken PBR. I'm going Heineken in that war. Sorry.
Yeah, me
don't
too.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me, Frank Booth.
Yep.
Great experience. I don't know how the restoration compares to the 25th, but if you can see it, if it comes out in some way, shape, or form, especially theatrical, go see it.
Nice.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought the Blu-ray was solid, but it's felt like it still had some room for improvement. So I think it's a ABC codec. It really good Blu-ray, but could be even better. So I would love to see Criterion do it.
And I don't know if this was a 4K scan. It may be. It looked impeccable on screen though. So
yeah.
Oh, and I it's one of my favorite Lynch's. It's up there with Mulholland Drive, so I give it a 10. And nice. I know I don't give those often. So
nice, yeah. It's between those two films for me for Lynch. I can't pick. They're just both great. So, well, the second movie I wanted to just briefly talk about was Chimes at Midnight. I think I'd mentioned this on the show before that I was going to see this and had a really good time with this. There was the next film actually preceded it, so it was a double feature for the Burlington Film Society, the local film society that we show. And this was an interesting kind of story that in showing this. I got to do the intro, which was nice. I really tried to keep it short, but it was fun to, I mentioned the cinematography and just talked briefly about Wells, how he said that this is really his favorite film of his, or really he's not his favorite, but he said, if I wanted to get into heaven on the basis of one movie, that's the one I would offer up, because to me it's the least flawed. So, which, of course, sounds like a filmmaker saying, it's his least flawed, not necessarily his favorite.
Right.
So,
right.
But
that sounds very Wells-ish, too.
Yes. So, it was a really good time. I actually had the pleasure of sitting behind, I'll lead into the story briefly. There was a English professor. They did an outreach to have a bunch of the local professors, English professors, and one actually did buy 60 tickets. So it was a sold out screening, which doesn't happen, or close to it. I shouldn't say sold out, but close to it, which doesn't happen often there. And so there were a lot of students, and I was sitting behind a group of, there were four students in front of me, and one of them was, checking her phone to see what time it was every 10 minutes.
Boo.
And
boo.
At one point, turning to her side. I don't know if she was falling asleep or whatever, but but there were others that there was one, the young woman right next to her, I don't think she moved. So, there was some, some good reactions, a lot of laughter at the right points in the film. So I think people were
that's what I'm
engaged.
Yeah, I would, as much as I respect that film, I would kind of get that, especially from 20-something.
Certainly.
You know, it's black and white, it's Shakespeare, it's, is this funny? What is this?
Right, right.
It's, to, you know, that B word, boring.
Boring.
Yeah. I get it. I'm hoping that we'll, there's going to be announcements soon. I'm hoping that Chimes will be there. But yeah, there's been a lot of buzz, and now you've seen it on this print. So I'm looking forward to seeing it too. Although ours played for a week. I didn't go, and it played just in the rotation. Apparently it didn't do well in our theater. I can't really point any fingers since I didn't go.
right.
So yeah, I'll wait for DVD. I think on that one though, just from experience, you really need subtitles.
Yeah, and it's just two viewings for me, because I watched the screener first and then this on the big screen. You really do need subtitles. I will say that the big screen version was much better. I could tell. Well, I shouldn't say much better, but I really noticed the clarity and the inky blacks, and it really looked nice, that much better than it did on, you know, a Vimeo screener on my TV. So folks have something to look forward to, and I understand it is going to be, they're still working on restoring it further. So that's what makes me keep thinking maybe it's going to, may not come out right away, or, you know, possibly later this year. We'll see, but yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Chimes at Midnight. Very, very good stuff. So, any others, Aaron?
Son of Saul, which we have talked about probably a lot on this podcast, as one of those, you know, it won the Oscar, it won a Cannes, was buzzed. You know, I think we speculated whether it was going to be a Criterion. Wasn't, but I finally got to see it. Have you seen it yet?
I have not. Very high on the list for, you know, for what it is.
See it. It's difficult.
And
my wife didn't like it too much. But I got into it. The way it's shot, and I really appreciated how it's shot. Now it doesn't. There's not a lot of exposition. You're not going to get, you know, voiceover saying where they're at. You know, you can tell where they're at. They're in something like Auschwitz, so it's, you know, not a pleasant theme movie. But it's also very very tight-knit, almost claustrophobic the way it's shot. You know, it's kind of like right over your shoulder, and you really see things from this one guy's perspective. A lot of close-ups, a lot of extreme close-ups. But I actually kind of liked that. I liked just how immersed you were into that, his experience. I mean, however difficult that experience, it was just very well done. It actually wasn't quite as harrowing as I expected, but maybe that's because I've seen Shoah, and so have you seen Shoah?
I haven't. No.
Okay, you still someday. On the shelf. That's another, you know, long movie, but that's a movie, and that gets into the mechanics and the logistics and the process of the Holocaust, and that's a very, very difficult movie. So that and that has people talking. People like the characters in this movie talking about their experiences and reliving them and you know, trying to process the horror, really. Whereas this time it's more, it's almost like I'm trying to think of a good comparison, but Everybody Wants Some.
You really can't. Son of Salt, Everyone Wants Some.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really like a short period of time that you experience in somebody's life. And now, of course, and I'm not at all comparing the Holocaust to
subject
frat boys
matter
in college.
A little different. Yeah.
I'm just talking about the immersive, the format of just a day in the life kind of thing.
Sure.
Or like Dazed and Confused, a day in the life. So very good. I gave it an 8. I think I haven't seen all of the Oscar movies, but I'm okay with it winning. I'll have to. I know you've seen Embrace of the Serpent. I'm going to see Mustang. So I forget what else
was. That's another good one. Yeah, I think those are the two ones that I've seen. Both excellent. So good crop of foreign films this year.
Yeah. So, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I saw a ton of stuff. So, but anyway, go ahead.
Nice. Maybe we'll cover some more there. Yeah.
Maybe a speed round at the end.
Yeah. Well, the other one I just wanted to mention, and this isn't one that anyone on this podcast will probably ever see because it's called A Vermont Romance. This was a Vermont Romance is a 1916 film. It was the first Vermont film ever shown. And just the only reason I really wanted to share it is because it was it's a recent undertaking. There's a group in Vermont, the Vermont Movie Archive Project. You know, Vermont's a small state, the least populated state in the country, and it's not very well known for its, you know, film culture and cinema history. But, you know, it's really nice to see them kind of undertaking it. And it just made me think of, you know, maybe other listeners have such a undertaking ongoing because they're going to be really, this was the first restoration and they're looking to restore so that they don't get lost a lot of old Vermont films. So it's a really worthy project. I purchased the Blu-ray to, you know, to support them as I'm wont to do buying Blu-rays.
What was it called again?
A Vermont Romance.
A Vermont Romance. Okay.
1916. Yeah.
You've had one of those.
I have.
At least.
It's ongoing.
Congrats. This movie does not end.
Yeah, it's only 35 minutes. It's like three reels, and it was nice. It featured a new music score by someone that just, you know, sat locally and played the piano. So, you know, the film was fine. It was kind of interesting for what it was. And like I said, I bought the Blu-ray, but a nice, you know, nice reception. And so it's just one of those things. I hope people can kind of you know, maybe they have something like this that would happen locally, other groups where they live that would undertake something like this. And, you know, I, of course, love the live music. So I just wanted to plug that, too. I know there's other groups out there. I've seen Nosferatu, the Andrew Alden Ensemble tours that film, the Murnau film. So you can, you know, there are ways to see silent films with live music. So I definitely recommend it. Very cool.
Yeah. I saw Caligari once with a or Caligari with a rock band, which was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. And also I'd say just support your local cinema in general, just because that's, you know, that's good for you. They get support them, whether it's donating or attending.
Yeah. Just go see the movies. Yep.
They'll get more stuff. So yay, right. Local film.
Exactly. That was the other one. Dr. Caligari was the other one that Alden Ensemble had done, so they kind of tour that around. So, good stuff.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna do a speed round because I saw so many gosh darn Fargo Nightshole movies. Okay, I'm just gonna be really quick. Profound Desires of the Gods, Shohei Imamura, almost a 3-hour, gorgeous, gorgeous movie.
Nice.
The Great Silence, which is a spaghetti western, was influenced The Hateful Eight. One of the most, well, I'm not gonna say. Quite an ending, and I can understand why Tarantino loved this movie. Cutter's Way, which our good friend Brian Sauer recommended,
yeah,
also very good. I watched the Twilight Time, good transfer. I didn't watch the commentary, but let's see, The Magician, Bergman.
Oh, nice little Bergman kick for you. I like it.
Little Bergman, yeah. Well. I'm doing these eight lists, and he just happens to have been productive in the eight.
A few
years.
In the eights, yeah.
And nice. Concussion, which was, which we saw last night, one of the last of the Oscar films. Not so good. Interesting subject, but poor execution. Not a very good performance, in my opinion, at least.
Nice, cool, nice speed round. Some stuff there. I want to see the. There was one there. What was the Hateful Eight one, I just forgot it. That went right to my top of my list of the one I want to watch with my movie group.
I saw a whole bunch of movies, too many, and you can go to my letterbox if you want to see what else I saw. There's probably twice, maybe three times that in the last couple of weeks.
Nice. So. Nice to, it's a good, you know, if you're going to be sick, at least, you know, you can enjoy your time doing something you want to do.
Yeah, you know, being sick and being a cinephile actually kind of go all right. You know, I never want to be sick, but, you know.
Right. Never ask for it. But
right. But I'll take it.
Nice. So, should we transition into Only Angels Have Wings? Film 1939, So yeah, it's starring Cary Grant, Jean Arthur, Rita Hayworth, Thomas Mitchell, Ellen Jocelyn, and the guy who I cannot pronounce his last name very well, Richard Barthelmess, who played
yes.
McPherson. So, and directed by Howard Hawks, written by Jules Firthman. So this was a kind of a mainstay for Hawks. He also did The Big Sleep, Rio Bravo, To Have and Have Not. He's covered in the supplements a bit. And Joseph Walker was the other one I really noted because he was Oscar nominated for cinematography here. He also did It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, His Girl Friday, It Happens One Night. Just lots of great films really from this kind of era. So, I guess I should mention what the film is about. Crackling dialogue and visual craftsmanship of the great Howard Hawks. So it's Jean Arthur as a traveling entertainer who gets more than she bargained for during a stopover in a South American port town. She meets the handsome and aloof daredevil pilot played by none other than Cary Grant, who runs an airmail company. So, and lots of airplanes in this film. what did you think of Only Angels Have Wings, Aaron?
I thought it was something. And of course, Hawks is if you've seen a lot of Hawks films, he is all over the radar as far as genre and subject. Now, he did have a few flying films, and I think we'll get into that when we talk about the supplements a little bit. But he had just done Bringing Up Baby, which is a screwball comedy, and he'd also done 20th Century, which is another, and you mentioned a couple other different genre films. He did Red River, which is also on Criterion.
Right.
So he's really, I think, as far as one of the classic auteurs, he's really one of the most versatile. You know, maybe him, maybe William Wyler. No, I think really Hawks takes the cake.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I mean, and very consistent too. Even though he's a very masculine filmmaker, but he spins a good yarn, tells a good story, creates suspense, and is great with comedy. I'd say his screwball comedies are right up there with everybody else, with the best of them.
Yeah,
this is a flying movie, and he had done a few others or a couple others, and he had himself flown in the Air Force or during World War I. So, and you can tell, at least with this, that he does have an affinity for it, an attunement for flying. Kind of does capture the movie, or the practice, the danger, really. So I found this movie scary at times. Mm. Did you?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I didn't really think of scary, but I really felt for the people on screen, and you know, there's a lot of use of miniatures. Sometimes I swear, Aaron, I didn't realize it was miniatures until after. I think sometimes with the landing scenes you can see it, but some of them I was like, boy, are we in a plane, someone filming him from a plane, because the camera's kind of moving quite a bit. That felt dangerous. And you know, there's scenes where the plane just feels like it's going to run into the side of the mountain. You know, but it doesn't. I just think of that extended. There's an extended take where he's really flying through the pass there. So yeah, it's.
Oh yeah, there's one scene where he drops and while he drops down the mountain.
Yeah.
And free falls and flies through there. I of course we should say that we are going to spoil this a little bit. So if you haven't seen this and don't want to listen to us yabber about. some plot points. Well, actually, I don't know if you consider it a spoiler, but near the beginning, there's a dangerous flight. Actually, the first dangerous flight with Joe, who we get to know through his flirting with Jean Arthur's character, and they use both flight and they use radar, communications on the ground, and they create a lot of suspense just by the banter back and forth. Just the elevation and. You know, we know how that scene turned out. So that's, a pretty dark movie, but also exhilarating. You know, you get the idea why, even though the movie came out far later, one movie I kept coming back to was The Right Stuff.
I didn't think about it. It's been a while since I've seen that. Yeah.
Well, that's also, you know, very masculine. It's about just the grit you need as a human being to be able to do this sort of thing. And of course, like, you know, that was a movie 50 years later, and it was about a time period, you know, maybe 20, 30 years later, mm-hmm. with Jaeger and the astronauts. But yeah, these guys, you could say the right stuff, just that ideal applied to them too. You know, it's whoever had it was the one who lived, kind of like a Darwinist.
Yeah. Survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Occupation that, but people loved it, had a passion for it, and would risk their lives. So yeah, I think Hawks really captured it very well.
Yeah, it's amazing. You alluded to it too. I mean, he really captures the masculine and, you know, the relationship between men, you know, in this film. I was really caught up with a lot of that, and some of it comes through in the supplements. But how, you know, he was an airman in World War One, and there's a lot of references back to even you know, I think kind of that military relationship that people had at this time, where they, you know, they're going to do the job, they're going to get it done, and, you know, they're just their drive to live to see another day, but they also, you know, support each other in that, you know, mm-hmm. each one of them will do the job when it needs to be done. And there's even, you know, you alluded to the accidents that happen, and you even have the, you know, kind of those somber scenes where you see the effects of someone that's left, and, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of sharing, you know, it just reminds of like dog tags that a military sure. person might have. Yeah. So yeah, just a similar kind of relationship.
And you have to think of the time period too. This was 1939, right yep. on the eve of World War II. And even though Hawks and, you know, Hawks, you know, was involved with the war effort, or the he was one of the six that went and worked with the war team, right?
Yes, I believe so, I remember.
But again, I also thought of a couple of French films, Wages of Fear.
That's yeah, one. I had that in my notes too. You couldn't, I mean, without the dangerousness of it, and of course we have nitroglycerin in an airplane, right. So yeah.
And of course, you know, we're talking about movies that came after it, which I think speaks to the, you know, the importance of this movie, yep. whether they were influenced directly or indirectly. And I also thought of another movie that came out the same year overseas about flying, which was Rules of the Game. Which was about, you've seen the Renoir.
I have.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know, it's about, well, really about Lindbergh crossing the Atlantic. So that's another story of, you know, another suspenseful story of flying an aircraft, you know, with immense danger. And there was also a good movie about, or a decent movie about Lindbergh with Jimmy Stewart a couple decades later.
Mm-hmm.
But, I thought it was pretty strong as far as, and one thing I liked was the supporting characters.
Yeah, they were great. The actors quite a bit. The character that played Kilgarran, I believe his name Kilgarran, he was great. He just had that kind of piercing look to him. He just seemed, you know, tailor made for this role. And Rita Hayworth's first film. I understand it was great to see her on screen, you know, really for the first time. And Cary mm-hmm. Grant is, you know, great as always. One of the things in the he's not really the supporting character, but it does talk in the documentary about how Hawks was able to capture kind of the dark side of Cary Grant. I didn't really think about that, you know, really in watching this film. I wasn't in tune with the darkness of it for some reason, Aaron. I guess, you know, especially compared to other films of this era. But, you know, thinking back on it, I mean, yeah, it really captures a different Cary Grant, but, you know, still Cary Grant in this film.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. And I wouldn't say darkness. Well, the darkness is that you're dealing with death, and it's how you deal or don't deal with death, or, you know, acknowledge or not acknowledge. I would say it's more of a hardness than a darkness to me. I think he played
that's a better word.
I don't want to say bulletproof, but impenetrable character.
Right. With his moments, with his moments, you know, like the moments where they would go through the their effects, you know, you would see the kind of
break down,
but you know, you would kind of see it getting to him. So yeah, and some some moments of levity too. I loved the music number that was you know they got into. There's not much music. There's music. We were talking before the podcast. But music over the credits, and then there's the one music number that was really just great. I had written, I wish I'd seen more of Jean Arthur's ability, because she is a showman, and I would have almost liked to see more. But we do get a really nice music number, so you kind of get a an eye into that. You get Cary Grant singing, sort of.
so you took notes.
I did here and there.
Yeah, I tried not to.
Nice.
But back to the supporting characters, I didn't catch the name. Did you mean Bartholomew or not Bartholomew?
Yes, Bartholomew.
McPherson. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That Bat McPherson, the kind of grizzled, the one the pilot who had let somebody or had. Had committed an act of cowardice. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Well, he had two names. It was Kilgarn and was his original name, and then he changed his name to McPherson. But yeah, it's Bat McPherson.
Thank you. Okay. I was confused. Yeah, that character was very, very good. And also a good example of a hardened character, you know, somebody that's shamed.
Right.
That I really think this captures the American work ethic too, which was probably idealized at this time of the war. The male work ethic, through hail and the sleet, snow, and or clouds, with or without radar coverage, or
it's just scary. Yeah, scary with all you have is that one lookout to watch to see how is the path open, is it closed? Yeah,
we take it for granted now. Also the kid with the eyesight issue and
he was great.
Him not being able to fly, and I found it interesting in the supplements. I don't know if you picked up on this, but they hinted at a homosexual relationship with.
Yeah.
Did you capture?
I didn't. It's interesting that they brought that up, because to me it was just a masculine relationship, and there's some affinity, some affection there, but I didn't see it that way. But maybe today you would.
Me too. I saw it as a bromance, as a extreme bromance, like a Paul Rudd, Jason Segel kind of bromance.
But it didn't seem that kind of off putting. They even talked about the way that Cary Grant dresses, in that. But
right. Yeah, no. I didn't pick up on that. I'm not that I'd have any issues with there being some flamboyant. I think there are some other '30s films that I do see some homoerotic elements that I'm not going to go into right now, but sure. But yeah, I captured the opposite. I thought it was an extremely masculine movie, and really captured that masculinity. And while we're there, how about the femininity? You mentioned Rita Hayworth.
Yeah.
That's her breakout role, and she played, but she was a supporting character. However, it was a notable character. But what do you think of Jean Arthur?
I liked her a lot. It's interesting the way that Hawks uses her, because she's really our entry point into the story, and she's kind of on edge a little bit coming off the boat, but then really opens up when she realizes that these people are Americans, and she really starts to. She has a lot of different emotions, I guess, trying to fit in, but also, eventually taking with this group. I understand Hawks had some trouble with her as an actress, and I can see that a little bit. She wasn't quite up to par with, like Cary Grant or even, Thomas Mitchell, who played Kid, I think. But I thought she was a great, really, entry into this. And, it kind of worked when she, I wouldn't say disappeared, but she kind of came in and out. I thought that worked well for the film.
Yeah, she appeared when she needed to. Another character I like was Dutchie, which is just another one of the many peripheral characters.
Yeah, he's great.
I actually wasn't as fond of Jean Arthur. I thought she was one of the weaker elements. It just seemed that she was a little out of place in the film. Her Her tone was a little too upbeat, I thought, at times, a little distant from reality. She didn't seem to meld with the rest of the group. And, you know, she's not supposed to. She's the outsider. But I still thought it was, I don't know, it did take me out of Yeah. Even then Hayworth, who, of course, was a rookie or near rookie. She'd been in a few things. But this was the biggest role of her career at that point.
Yeah.
And of course, I've seen Jean Arthur in other things, and she's been terrific. But so maybe that's, you know, this didn't seem like a Jean Arthur type of movie because this is a darker movie. You know, she's been in some Capra movies.
I liked to. I mean, I could certainly see that. That's why, you know, was saying I think she was one of the weaker overall, but I did think she worked. I liked some of the scenes where, you know, she's in Cary Grant's room and kind of how that, you know, people keep coming into the room talking about the bromance aspects of it. So, you know, she kept pulling me in where, you know, she'd go away for maybe just long enough and then she'd come back. And I liked when she showed up again, but really good cast overall.
Maybe it's gonna be, I would just see her performance as more like as if she's acting against Gary Cooper in Mr. Deeds or something, you know. Maybe that's just a minor quibble. She did have her moments, but I like the film. I know some people really love this movie. Some people call it their favorite film of all time.
Yeah, I just found one from this year from, I'm going to forget the artist, the author's name from the AV Club. He said it's his favorite film and was, you know, had written an article about it coming from Criterion. I mean, he put it up there with... of course, came out in the great 1939 year, possibly Hollywood's greatest, you know, with Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, Wuthering Heights, Mr. Smith, I mentioned, Stagecoach, another, Thomas Mitchell also being in Stagecoach, that was kind of my, you know, through line there. But I didn't realize how much love there was for this film before really reading that.
I'm actually pulling up that AV Club article.
Yeah, it's I'm certainly there with them. I was really taken by this, and I think even more so, again, a little bit removed. I mean, one thing that I just loved the airplane effects, and, you know, sometimes not knowing if it was, you know, someone in a plane, it seemed kind of handheld, or the model work. And there's, again, some on the supplements, but I just love the model work in this. I was reminded of being a big, you know, old school Star Wars fan, and how, you know, they used a lot of models in those films. And of course, we have a Star Wars connection in Ben Burtt in the supplements. He's the sound designer on Star Wars, kind of talking about the movie. So that was, you know, really nice to kind of see the behind the scenes. And it's really well done, even though I think there are scenes where, you know, it's a model, especially some of the landing scenes. It's, you can tell the work is really well done. And there's even a scene, Aaron, where a plane is taking off, and I half expected the rain to come onto the camera, just like in a 3D movie or something like that. It was just so, you know, the camera was right there, and I was just so in the moment of this plane, you know, taking off and it being wet and rainy. And I was just, you know, expecting to see water on the camera, but old Hollywood didn't quite go there.
Yeah, but the effects really were something. And I know there was a little YouTube that Criterion did with the effects, and I think that was, there was a lot in the supplement. Should we go ahead and rate it and get to the supplements, do you think?
Sure. Yeah. Been bringing them up a little bit. So what's your rating, Aaron? What do you think?
I gave it an 8.
Nice.
Which is, I think it's very, very strong. Yeah. Again, as you mentioned, it's a very strong year. In fact, I also saw Drums Along the Mohawk. It was one of my short takes recently. This is better than that, although that was a good movie. I think, yeah, it's one of the stronger ones, and I think when I get to my 39 list, it'll probably be up there,
pretty
maybe top 10.
Mm.
Yeah, of course, I wouldn't put it up against, like, Rules of the Game, but it's up there.
Nice.
What about you?
I'm going to go 8-2. It's funny. I was thinking about this just earlier, and I was originally thinking like 7, but then you know I read the article and I just thought about again the special effects. I kept coming back to the story of masculinity, and it's definitely an 8 film for me. I could even go higher. I might eventually place this higher, like a 9. But I loved how this was a kind of small, it felt, although we get the airplanes, it felt like a small location film. And I was thinking of Casablanca. And of course, that comes up
that too,
in
yeah.
the supplements again. It's just this kind of, this town that you'll never go to. And it was funny too. I just felt some synergy with the supplements when they brought that up as a possibility. So yeah, it's an 8 film. It's certainly one, if you haven't checked it out, it's well worth seeing and owning a nice transfer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was a blind spot for me. I had not seen it, and a lot of people have raved about it over the years, so I was really excited to see it. It could grow on me over the years. One thing, it's a very dark picture, and I don't mean dark content-wise, but just visually-wise. There's a lot of night scenes at this little Baraka, was it? I might have that wrong.
Baranka, I think it
Baranka,
is.
Baranka, yeah. Thank you. A lot of outdoor night scenes. It definitely has a feel. A look and feel that's unique for classic Hollywood.
Unique film. That's definitely a good way to think of it. It wasn't quite what I expected. Hearing about the airplane effects and just a good story. It doesn't. I would say like a reason maybe I wouldn't give it a 9 or 10 is it does seem to have a few little plot contrivances here or there. Some of them, like with the gun. I mean, maybe that was good. Maybe it wasn't. I could kind of explain it away either way, but it's a very solid 8 Hollywood film for sure.
Yeah, a little bit, and not to harp on Jean Arthur, but the romantic element was a little tough to believe given the circumstances, but and the time frame. But it was Hollywood was a Hollywood film, and it was a Hawks film. Hawks did not shy away from having romance. So
All right,
supplements. There weren't many. I know we really only like 3, 4, and one of them, which was a radio adaptation. So which was your favorite?
Well, originally, I probably would still say I liked the David Thompson on Only Angels Have Wings because, again, I just love the visual essays, which this isn't. This is an interview, but I kind of thought about that where I just got the most out of it, I think, the most information, the most look into Howard Hawks, who I've seen a number of his films, but I didn't know him as well as I wanted to, and so I got that really nice view into him, the way he some of the things I talked about, the darkness of Grandy got into, the male friendship being important into his films, and how you mentioned the just before World War II and Hawks coming from World War I, understanding kind of that male code. So I liked that one certainly the best. The other ones, I think it's solid supplements, though they are light. I'd almost want to go with the Howard Hawks and his aviation movies because I like the, just the behind the scenes and the looking at how the special effects and the miniatures were created. But yeah, I'll say David Thompson interview, still my favorite.
I like
you?
That. I'm going with the aviation movies, which nice. It had the special effects, but also the history of aviation films. Yeah. And it also kind of put the film in its time. I can't say that I definitely wasn't alive in 1939, but I can't really fathom what the early aerial experience was like.
Oh, sure.
And then making the comparison of people then seeing planes fly in the air, these planes fly in the air would be like us seeing a Boeing 707 fly in the air and maybe crash. And of course, we hear about air crashes, not all the time, but they're big news when we do.
Yeah.
And it's scary,
Yeah, definitely.
And I did like hearing the history, how this was one of the first aerial films, the sound effects and how, by the way, this lost the special effects special effects Oscar to some movie called The Rains Came, which I haven't heard about. Maybe it's worthy, but it's hard to imagine that. I haven't seen a lot of classic Hollywood, at least from the 30s, movies with better special effects.
Yeah, agreed.
But no, I enjoyed, and really the latter part of that feature was about the special effects and about the model airplanes. And I just thought it was fascinating. 20 minutes just flew by. I liked the Thompson piece too. I didn't watch the adaptation, the radio, or listen. And I kind of listened to the Hawks interview with Bogdanovich in the background. But
mm-hmm. The interview was pretty good. Not some nice nuggets in there, and just interesting with Bogdanovich trying to understand his process a bit. And the adaptation, I did the same as you. I put it in the background. It's interesting for what it was. A good little way to kind of revisit the film a bit, although it is shorter. But I thought it, pretty solid though. I mean, like you said, it's not a lot of supplements. There's no commentary, but there is two brand new Criterion supplements in the Thompson interview and Howard Hawks and his aviation movies, and I thought they're pretty well done. Even the radio adaptation, not something I'd need to go back to, but it's something that belongs there for sure on the disc. So
They're neat. Again, I've said this before, but I wish you could take these with you. I wish you could put them on your phone and listen in the car or something. It's tougher to put them on a TV and just kind of. Do the dishes or something.
Yeah, we need that digital copy, don't we?
Yeah, maybe Filmstruck. Come on. Criterion reading?
So, with the supplements being a little bit slighter, I don't want to go 7. I'll go 7.5, a little lower than the film rating, but overall 7.5 Criterion. How about you?
I'm with you with the skimpy supplements. Skimpy's not a fair word. The light supplements, not very many. I think it was maybe an hour and a half's worth if you count the radio play and the interview. But I think they were quality. So I'm going to keep my rating at an 8.
Nice.
So, but I guess we have to I'll round down. 7.5 is fine.
Yeah, right. We're right there. So and is this thing canon worthy?
Not yet. It's one that maybe down the road, maybe with time, maybe with a little more reading, maybe, but not quite yet.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. It could be a grower. It's interesting. It was a first time watch for both of us, and has the potential to get there. So,
but if we get to more Howard Hawks, I'm sure we'd find a lot of places in the canon for his work.
Oh yeah, for sure. Nice. Well, that's Only Angels Have Wings, and this is Criterion Close-Up. I just mentioned, Aaron, where our next show, we did mention it earlier, but we will be talking about the Manchurian Candidate in about a week or so. The show will probably come out about a week after this one does, so we'll look forward to that upcoming.
Yeah, roughly, give or take.
Somewhere around there.
Somewhere, right, yeah. And then we'll have an interview coming up around the corner, and then we'll take a break. I forgot.
That's
we have
it.
An interview before the break.
That's
it. Yeah. So, should we fly this plane? We don't want to fly it into the ground, so let's fly it around a valley and land safely on a on a cliff, next to a cliff.
We could go way above the clouds and just see how high we can go, and then just go in a tailspin if we lose our bearings. But
Mark, get control of this. We flew too high.
I how I'm going to get control, Aaron? I'm going to ask for some iTunes reviews, because we could certainly use some. We haven't had any we had a couple last month, but we need some iTunes reviews. So folks, definitely give us a rating. It always helps out the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. So
yes, and feedback, tweet us. Even if we're not giving something away, feel free to let us know what you thought of the show. And if you agree, disagree, I know a lot of people love Only Angels Have Wings and might take me to task for Gene Arthur. Be nice. That's all we ask.
Yep.
If you want to give your own feedback, we'd love to hear it. Also, feedback at CriterionCloseUp.com.
Yeah.
Twitter is CriterionCU. On Facebook, Criterion Close Up.
Yep, you'll find us there too. And Aaron, where do folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me AOS505, and you can find me at Letterboxd. My initials are DSNT, and your mind will be blown. You'll be like, where does this guy find all the time?
That's what happens when he gets sick.
Yeah.
And you can find me, Mark Hurney, H-U-R-N-E, at M-H-U-R-N-E on Twitter and Letterboxd. And, yeah, thanks, everyone, for listening to Criterion Close-Up. We'll talk to you soon.